The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Let's start off with, I am your food, food on your plate. Salmon. For this big fish, there's no place like home. Google salmon crossing the road and you'll find dozens of videos of me and my pals skittering across wet streets and highways like wind-up toys on a mission. Cars slow and stop to let us cross. Water spraying from our flicking tails as we navigate this unnatural landscape and flop back into the river on the other side. The videos capture me after I've been away at sea for up to 5 years, traversing thousands of miles while eating the punk pink orange krill that give my flesh its trademark rosy color. To guide me on this trek, I use my uniquely astute inner GPS, which taps into the Earth's magnetic fields, to get me closer to my birthplace. Then I begin to sniff out the specific river where I was hatched. I head home to reproduce and, alas, usually to die, probably after crossing a road or two. When your local fishmonger or waiter distinguishes me as wild, you should know that it is a loose category indeed. The 8 living species of me, 7 in the Pacific, blur boundaries enough that an Atlantic salmon is actually more closely related to a trout from the Northeast than to a salmon from the Pacific, while Pacific salmon are more closely tied to West Coast rainbow trout than to Atlantic salmon. More to point, I am so exquisitely adjusted to the very river I was born in that my size, my shape, and maybe even how I taste are specific to and determined by that locale. If I'm born far up in the wild Yukon River, for instance, I will grow much larger and fatter than a salmon born in a small-time stream a mile away. After all, I will need enough strength and fat to swim home against the Yukon's mighty current and dig a nest for eggs in its rocky bottom. And fishermen know this, preferring to catch me precisely at the Yukon's mouth, when my fat stores those silky rich omega-3s that make me delicious for eating and good for the heart, are in peak condition for a long swim upstream. I've been a North American staple forever, in large because of these unusual spawning habits. I'm the size of an ocean-grown fish, that my return to local rivers has allowed fishermen of every epoch to catch me without bothering to head out to sea the way they have for cod and tuna. Such accessibility has backfired against me, however. While my Atlantic brethren were once native to almost every coastal river northeast of the Hudson, they are now found in just 8 lonely rivers in Maine, and thus protected. Word to the wise, if you see wild Atlantic salmon on a menu, you're getting illegal fish or false information. Even as they become endangered in the wild, Atlantic salmon have thrived in open ocean net pens. However, give me a leg, or is it a fin, up in the fish farming business. Tuna and cod, in contrast, have been successfully farmed only recently and with difficulty. As a result, I've become the second most popular seafood in the United States, after shrimp, with 70% of the salmon Americans eat coming from farms that line the many sheltered coast. That easy, relatively inexpensive abundance is a blessing for diners and cooks. My fattiness makes me forgivingly moist, even if you overcook me. Hence my ubiquity at weddings, galas, and your neighbor's dinner party. Nevertheless, be gentle with heat when poaching me, or use my skin as a buffer between the heat and my flesh when pan-searing me, for a more delicious result. Few fish lend themselves to such a variety of preparations. I can be eaten pickled, smoked, roasted, poached, grilled, or pan-seared, and, of course, I'm excellent raw. On that last point, a doozy of a fish story. The Japanese considered eating raw salmon to be disgusting and unheard of until the 1990s. That's when enterprising Norwegians, scheming to find a way to sell their surplus of farm salmon, persuaded Japanese consumers to incorporate my raw flesh into their sushi-eating customs. That's right. Your salmon avocado roll is in fact the product of a genius marketing campaign out of Scandinavia. Developments like this have done wonders for my popularity, but with unintended consequences. Some farmers around the world looking to cut corners give me too many antibiotics and feed that tends to leave me with environmental toxins such as dioxin and PCBs. Look for Agricultural Stewardship Council, ASC checkmark on packaging to make sure you're buying from an organization committed to farming meat in a way that's healthier for you and the environment. There's another looming risk I should mention. It's to other fish. In 2017, about 300,000 Atlantic salmon escaped their pen in Washington State's Puget Sound. This caused concern that my East Coast version might overtake my West Coast version, endangering my already fragile ocean-going population. When in 2018, a fisherman caught a live Atlantic salmon in Washington's Skagit River with a belly full of fish bones, the worry increased. Was my domesticated breed surviving out in nature and threatening me in the wild? The incident led to Washington's decision to phase out Atlantic salmon farming at 2025. That's an important measure in my book. I'd like to stay wild and take a joyride on the open road for as long as I can. And here's a recipe. Broiled salmon with yogurt dill sauce. In a small bowl, stir together 1 minced medium clove garlic, 2 tablespoons mint shallot, 1 tablespoon mint fresh dill, 1 teaspoon Dijon mustard, and 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. Let stand 5 minutes. Stir in 3/4 cups plain yogurt, preferably full fat, and 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil. Season with salt and ground black pepper. Set sauce aside or refrigerate up to 1 day. Preheat broiler and set oven rack about 8 inches below broiler element. Line a rimmed baking sheet with foil. Season 4 6-ounce boneless, skinless, center-cut salmon fillets with salt and pepper. Broil salmon until brown and the center registers 15 degrees Fahrenheit, medium rare, to 125 Fahrenheit, medium, about 5 minutes. Serve salmon, passing sauce at the table. A fine plan. It's hard enough to get kids to put down their phones and read, so why find them for a late library book? In fact, some library systems now charge tardy adults only. Others have limited fees for everyone. In Los Angeles and San Jose, kids earn a $5 credit toward their late fees for time spent reading in the library. All they have to do is read a book or magazine, or even a comic book. It was World War II. The front, and we were on high alert. This is humor in uniform. Around midnight, I noticed movement behind a bush. Rather than fire a shot, I shouted out the first half of the password. George! I waited for whoever it was to prove he was an American and reply with the countersign Marshall. Instead, silence. George! Again, no reply. I lifted up my rifle and gave it one last try. George! The angry voice finally replied, "My name ain't George!" As the general inspected our troops, he asked some of the Marines which outfit they were serving with. Ramrod straight, each would respond, "Marine Air Group 36, sir, or 2nd Marine Division, General." Then there was one young private when the general asked, "What outfit are you in?" The Marine replied, "Dress blue, sir, with medals." And here's the cover story. How to survive anything. Expert advice on navigating life's perils, great and small. And there's a picture of a orange life ring, like the kind they have on ships, with a bite out of it that's pretty obviously a shark bite. And below that is a picture of a big shark's mouth. Shark attack. Your chances of being attacked by a shark aren't great, about 1 in 11.5 million. That said, if you want to avoid being that one, maintain eye contact. Sharks like to ambush, so turn your back and be a trigger. Do not let the shark get behind you. Don't create a commotion. Distance yourself by swimming backwards slowly to a safer bed. Do stay big or go small. If the shark looks aggressive, try to maintain a strong presence. But if it appears to be just swimming by, curling up and not causing a scene could encourage the shark to continue on its merry way. Do aim for the gills or eyes. If it's a shark attacking you, hitting those sensitive areas with anything you might have on you, such as a camera or a snorkel bass, could stun the shark temporarily and buy you some time. A blown-out tire. Blowouts are a serious business, causing an estimated 75,000 accidents a year and killing more than 400 drivers. If you hear that telltale boom, Firestone suggests taking these actions. Steer straight. Your car might be fishtailing, so get a firm grip on the wheel and do your best to keep the car moving in a straight line. Do not hit the brakes. Gently press the gas. Accelerating slightly can help you regain control and maintain your forward momentum. Ease off the pedal once the car stabilizes. Let the car slow down. A blown tire will act like a parachute and decrease your speed. Put on your emergency lights to alert other drivers. Get off the road. Once your speed falls below 20 miles per hour, you can use the brakes and the steering wheel to pull to the side of the road. Then you can call for help. And then there's a cute little kid of two toddlers standing there holding American flags, both of them in blue suits, one with a red tie and one with a blue tie, being cornered by someone with different political views. When you're married to someone from the world of politics, you socialize with opinionated people. Luckily, my mother, who was Nancy Reagan's social secretary, taught me diplomacy. Anytime somebody's making my blood boil, I wonder what they look like as an infant. All babies are cute. Then I smile. That's from Allie Wentworth, actor, author of Go Ask Allie, and wife of ABC's George Stephanopoulos, a former advisor to Bill Clinton. That's interesting. Her mother was an advisor to Nancy Reagan, and her husband was an advisor to Bill Clinton. That's kind of interesting. A bully in the jury room. It's Friday afternoon after a long week of deliberations, and you might be tempted to just go with the flow of your fellow jurors. There are lots of instances of one or two jurors imposing their will on the entire decision-making process, says Philip Anthony, CEO of the jury consulting firm Decision Quest. But your opinion matters. Too intimidated to voice your views? Write them down on paper. Even if you don't feel comfortable reading them aloud, you can pass the sheet around to the other jurors to make your thoughts known. Oh, this is one that's happened to me. Asking a woman when she's due and discovering she's not pregnant. Say you're sorry. Be sincere about it. And most important, move on. Continue to apologize or ramble only makes it worse. Now remember this. Never utter the word pregnant unless a woman brings it up first. Even if you think it, or know it, or even if she looks like she's about to give birth today. Say nothing unless she mentions it, says Diane Gossman, owner of the Protocol School of Texas. A pot that's boiling over. Lay a wooden spoon across the mouth of the pot. Food52.com recommends the wood's natural coolness will condense the steam and suppress the bubbles. Oh, that's interesting. Getting turned down for a raise. Stay calm. It's human nature to be disappointed, but tap down the urge to argue. Getting heated with your boss isn't going to help and would just make you look unprofessional. Ask questions. There could be all kinds of reasons your boss said no. It could be purely budgetary reasons rather than about your performance. Learning the true rationale can give you some peace of mind and maybe a plan for the next time around. Request a follow-up. Show your boss you are eager to do what it takes to earn his or her support. Number 4, negotiate for something else. While a raise would be nice, there are other benefits that might work better than the company's budget, such as a new title or more vacation time. Number 5, start looking for a new situation. If you've done your best to respond to the performance feedback and your prospects haven't improved, it may be time to seek a position elsewhere. A stubbed toe. Smashing your toe can make you see stars, but what should you do if the pain doesn't go away? If you don't think it's broken, you probably can treat it at home. Keep your foot immobile and raised if possible. Ice it every 20 minutes while you're awake for the first 24 hours. Then apply an ice pack 2 or 3 times a day until the pain subsides. When you have to be on the move, stabilize the toe by placing cotton between it and the neighboring toe and taping them together. However, if your toe truly looks crooked, if the skin is ruptured, or if the injury is to an all-important big toe, seek medical attention as soon as you can. A bad haircut. New York City-based hairstylist Jenny Saifu has faked a lot of bad cuts. The main reason they're bad? The lines aren't properly blended. Here's what you can do until it grows out. Number 1, use some product. Run mousse or styling cream through your hair, then slick it down for a sleek look, Saifu says. Number 2, break out the styling tools. If you're dexterous enough, with a cut curling iron or a wand, a few well-placed waves around your face can soften rough edges. Number 3, add accessories. Using a simple ponytail holder or headband can tame your hair and look chic at the same time. Number 4, see another stylist. Ask the person to cut your hair when it's dry, since it will fall different than when it's wet. Number 5, invest in some stylish baseball caps. No better time to show your support for your favorite team. Clogged ears on a flight. There are actually 3 ways to correct the problem, each named after a doctor who developed. The Valsalva maneuver. Take a deep breath, pinch both nostrils shut with your fingers, close your mouth, and attempt to exhale through your closed nose. Don't be overzealous with this maneuver if there is an off chance you could rupture an eardrum. The Toynbee maneuver. Pinch your nostrils shut and close your mouth while swallowing. This might take a try or two. The Frenzel maneuver. Pinch your nostrils shut and make a K sound. And I know all of you out there are trying that right now. An IRS audit. Maybe math isn't your strong suit. Or maybe you didn't report all that cash from your second job. Here's the 411 on what to do about those errant 1099s when the tax man or woman comes calling. Don't put your head in the sand. You typically have 30 days to respond to a tax notice before the IRS takes action. Do organize the paperwork the auditor requests. Making the job easier could win you some points. Also remember that it's your legal responsibility to prove your deductions. Don't forget that you're essentially testifying when you talk to an auditor. Answer questions with a yes or a no, but don't comment unless asked. Do make sure your file is complete. Missing some records? That's no excuse. Order duplicates. Don't cop an attitude. Auditors have a job to do, and having a chip on your shoulder won't help your case. Do know your rights. If you don't agree with the outcome, you can appeal it. Also might be wise to talk to a professional tax lawyer. Biting the inside of your mouth. How many of us have done that? First of all, rinse carefully. A swig of water will help get rid of any food that might irritate the cut. Apply pressure. Use gauze or washcloth to staunch any bleeding. Numb the pain by holding something cold against the wound. And I've got a picture here of a whole bunch of very delicious-looking popsicles. Keep rinsing with warm, salty water. Do it twice a day to help the wound heal, which should take 3 or 4 days. Targeted advertising. Yes, you were looking at those expensive sneakers online. The next thing you know, ads for them are showing up on your browser or your favorite news sites, hounding you to buy. Companies collect information about the sites you visit by using cookies, digital evidence that you're interested in their product, and then share your preferences with marketeers. Clicking on the small X in the upper right-hand corner of an ad will make it go away for the moment, but here are some longer-lasting fixes according to the New York Times. Number one, clear your cookies. Apple, Google, and Microsoft all provide instructions on how to remove cookies from popular browsers such as Safari and Chrome. Number two, reset your advertising ID. Your Apple or Android phone assigns you an advertising ID to help marketers track you. You can find the reset button on an Android device inside the Google Settings app. On the iPhone, the reset button is located under Settings in the Privacy menu under Advertising. Number three, purge your ad history. Go to myactivity.google.com to find out what data Google has stored about you and delete what you want to get rid of. Number four, install an ad blocker. For browsers, try uBlock Origin. On the iPhone, you can try OneBlocker X. Note that the Android users can block ads only by using a private browser, as Google banned ad blockers from its Play Store. Number five, use a private browser on mobile devices. Try Firefox Focus, DuckDuckGo, or Ghostry Privacy Browser, all of which have built-in ad and tracker blocking. Always losing your keys. Number one, focus. Wandering from room to room in a frenzy doesn't allow for a thorough search. Finish searching one area before moving to the next. Number two, seek out clutter. If keys were in plain view, you probably would have found them already. Research has shown that we waste a lot of time looking for in obvious areas. Number three, retrace your steps. Form a mental picture of where you were the last time you remembered having your keys, the time of day, who else was there, and what you were doing, etc. Recommends Irene Kahn, a professor of psychology at Villanova University. This is called context reinstatement. Number four, for the next time, make a plan. Go low-tech by setting up a designated place for your keys and use it every day. Or try a Bluetooth-enabled tracking device such as Tile or TrackR. Attach the fob to your keychain and then use your phone to make it ring to locate your lost keys. A persistent telemarketer. Don't hang up right away. The telemarketer will just call back until you actually talk to him or her. Don't engage with the telemarketer in any way by asking questions or explaining why you're not interested in the product. Do be polite. If the telemarketer is being rude, ask to speak to a supervisor. Don't say, this isn't a good time. That will only encourage the telemarketer to call back at another time. Do has to be put on the company's do not call list. Do, sign up for the National Do Call Registry at donotcall.gov. Bonus tips. If a telemarketer calls you by name, just say, sorry, wrong number. The company will likely take you off the calling list because they'll think the information profile is wrong. An awkward family gathering. Make a game plan before you arrive can help you brave the prickliest of relatives, according to Holly Brown, a family therapist based in Alameda, California. Here's how. Number one, think through the impending awkwardness. Where does it come from? Is it boredom? Or does the enforced familiarity somehow push your buttons? If you're prepared for the trigger, you can diffuse it. Consider it. Number two, consider the clock. How long do you have to stay? Can you just say quick hello? Knowing you, be miserable for a finite period can help. Number three, distract yourself. Plan ways to chill out a little, such as taking a breather in a quiet place or keeping yourself busy with putting out food or cleaning up. Number four, prepare a script. Be ready to handle awkward run-in with an, excuse me, I just saw Tom. I'll have to ask him something quickly. Or a nice, it was good to see you, and move on. Number five, enlist an ally. Have a trusted backup you can signal when Uncle Joe corners you and starts asking for a loan. Number five, an overflowing toilet. The high water toilet bowl is an ominous sight, but no need to call a plumber, just yet anyway. Here's what Family Handyman recommends. Number one, stop flushing. Yes, the rising water is cause for concern, but more flushing could cause it to flood. Instead, wait 10 minutes for the water level to drop. If it doesn't, remove the tank lid and lift the chain on the rubber flipper valve slightly to let a cup or two of water into the bowl to see whether that lowers the water level. Failing that, bring in the plunger, preferably a model with an extension flange, which fits the toilet better than one with a bell-shaped end. You could pull a woodchuck in from a hole with a toilet plunger with an extension flange, according to Family Handyman. Of course, the picture they show is the one they recommend you don't use. Number four, pull on a pair of rubber gloves. Make your first plunge a gentle one, because the bell is full of air and you don't want to blow water all over. Once you've created a seal, you can plunge harder. The clog's still stubborn? Feed a toilet snake down the pipe to snag the clog and try to break it up. Bonus tip, no tools handy? Try pulling in half a cup of hot water and some shampoo or dish soap. Let it sit for about 30 minutes and then see whether or not the clog dissolves. Frostbite. Not bundling enough for an extreme temperature can lead to trouble, especially if it's windy. Obviously, this doesn't have relationship right now since it's 80 degrees outside. The first signs of frostbite are often redness and tingling in the toes, fingers, nose, or ears. As the inner layers of tissue start to freeze, the skin becomes numb and hard. People with poor circulation are especially at risk. If you think you've been affected but can't get to a doctor, follow these directions. First, immerse the skin in warm water. You want the water to be between 100 degrees Fahrenheit and 108 degrees Fahrenheit. The tissue should thaw in 15 to 30 minutes. If you don't have a thermometer, you can test the water with an uninjured part of your body to make sure it's warm but not too hot to stay immersed in. Be gentle. You will likely experience swelling, blisters, and severe pain, all signs that the skin is warming up. Air dry the area. Don't towel, dry, or rub. Dress the wound. Coat one side of a cotton bandage or a piece of gauze with an antibiotic cream such as Silvadine or Neosporin. Attach it loosely to avoid restricting blood flow. Number four, take pain medication. Ibuprofen will reduce pain and inflammation. Now here's one that's very common, passing gas in public. If it's obvious you are the offender, a simple pardon me is all you need to say. No one is interested in a lengthy explanation of what you had for lunch that afternoon, says Thomas B. Farley, a.k.a. Mr. Manners. I guess if nobody knows who it is, you can just kind of look around and blame somebody else. A tornado. According to FEMA, two-thirds of U.S. households have no plan for responding to a natural disaster. Here's what to do to prepare to stay safe. 1. Assemble an emergency kit, including at least 1 gallon of water per person and non-perishable food for 3 days. A battery-powered or hand-crank radio, a flashlight, a first aid kit, a cell phone batteries and chargers, and a whistle. Establish a communication plan with your loved ones. Number 2. In the event of a tornado, head for the lowest level of your house and stay in the middle of the room away from the windows. Cover yourself with a mattress, sleeping bag, or blanket to shield yourself from debris. If you're in a building with an elevator, don't use it. Take the stairs to the lowest floors. Bonus tip, FEMA has a free app that provides alerts from the National Weather Service, a list of places to shelter, and disaster plans. You could download it at fema.gov/mobile.app. Getting bumped from a flight? An overbooked flight can be a hassle, but it can also have its rewards. Here's what you need to know, said Henrik Zimmer, CEO of Passenger Assistance at airhelp.com. Number one, airlines must rebook you and pay you if you will be significantly delayed. The maximum is $1,350 if you arrive at your destination more than 2 hours later than planned, 4 hours for international flights. Number two, you don't have to accept a flight voucher. The U.S. Department of Transportation requires that airlines provide compensation in cash, although in some cases you may have to file a claim. Keep in mind that compensation is only for involuntary removals. The compensation for voluntary giving up your seat is negotiable. The end of civilization. Preppers, a.k.a. survivalists, are passionate about preparing for disaster, have a secret code all their own. Good. Get out of Dodge, similar to bug out, which means you evacuate your home. BOV, B-O-V, bug out vehicle, the car, bus, van, motorhome, or bike you will use to get away from the emergency, or good, see above. Golden Horde, the masses of panicked people who are moving in on the area you are bugging out in. GDE, grid down event, a large-scale shutdown of the electrical grid, also called an off-the-grid event, QTGE. Inch bag, I'm never coming home bag. Teotihuacan, at the end of the world as we know it, the massive disaster, catastrophe, or cataclysm that will alter the way survivors live afterward. Yo-yo, you're on your own, self-explanatory. Okay, let's switch over to Consumer Reports and a subject that all of us, I think, are very concerned about. Mad about robocalls. So are we. Here we explain how things got so bad. Nearly 50 billion calls a year in the U.S. alone, and what carriers and the government should be doing more of to protect consumers. Plus, learn how you can join us to fight back. Robocalls have become the bane of Carlos Bezina's existence. His phone, he says, rings day and night with them, annoying him to the point where he no longer answers unless he knows for certain who's calling. He has removed a landline from his bedroom. The Bethesda, Maryland resident says he's missing important calls from faraway friends and family as a result. Caller ID, he says, is useless because call spoofing, which lets scammers call come through showing fake numbers that often look local, has become so prevalent. I've even gotten calls from myself, Brezina says, of calls that bizarrely come in spoofing his phone number. Me too. Probably around 80% of the calls to my cell phone and landline are from bothersome idiots, says Craig Stitting of Belleville, Illinois. It's gotten so that my six-year-old grandson yells, junk call every time the phone rings. Brezina and Steimling echoed the frustration of millions of people who feel their phones are under siege by auto-dialed spam and scam calls. Consumers shared their stories with us, complaining of chronic calls with suspicious offers for free trips and vacations, of robocallers attempting to bamboozle them into giving up their Social Security number. Some told of being threatened with arrest if they didn't immediately pony up unpaid taxes or settle a debt. They griped about being awakened frozen from sleep by scam calls, of being interrupted while on the pot, of the amount of time wasted running around the house searching for a ringing phone, only to find a robot on the other end. One woman, saying her brother may have anger issues, described a time he reached his robocall breaking point and shattered his phone with a hammer. Good for him. It's enough to make you feel nostalgic for those simpler times not so long ago when we were bothered only by human telemarketers hawking insurance or aluminum siding, albeit like clockwork at the family dinner hour. By every measure, the number of unwanted robocalls to our cell phones and landlines has reached an epidemic level. And if you think the crisis has grown exponentially worse in just the past year, that's because it has. In 2018, a record 48 billion robocalls were placed to phones in the U.S., according to UMail, a company that blocks and tracks robocalls. That works out to 1,500 robocalls per second, which is a 56.8 robocalls than there were in 2017. The reduce is partly a result of advances in telephone technology that let robocallers auto-dial thousands of numbers all over the world using VoLP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, in seconds for a fraction of what it would have cost just a short time ago. It's become very easy and cheap to make an enormous number of calls to the point where you don't even need technical expertise, says Alec Kowalicki, UMail's CEO. If I wanted to pick a borough in New York City and hit every person with a voicemail telling them to go visit some website, I can do it for a couple of $1,000. But the onslaught is also a function of just how thorny the robocalls problem has been to solve. Wily robocallers seem to stay a few steps ahead of telephone companies and government regulators working to thwart them. The National Do Not Call Registry, for instance, established almost 16 years ago to stop legal telemarketers from calling people who didn't want to be contacted, has failed to stop the many fraudsters who pay no attention to the list. National contests to find robocall solutions have led to call blocking services such as NoMoRobo, which, although useful, often limited by the fact that the list of suspicious numbers they rely on can't possibly be updated frequently enough, and because spoofing numbers has become so commonplace. Criminal robocalling operations have set up call centers abroad, complicating the Federal Trade Commission's ability to clamp down on them. As a result, robocalls have today become the largest source of consumer complaints to the FTC, accounting for more than 65% of the total. What's the level of annoyance that you have to reach with a robocall so that our phone company would do anything, something about it? Asked an exasperated Bresnia. But in fact, some recent developments are a cause for optimism. A bipartisan bill co-sponsored by John Thune, Republican South Dakota, and Ed Markey, Democrat Massachusetts, called the Telephone Robocall Abuse Criminal Enforcement and Deterrence TRACED Act, was introduced in Congress in January. It seeks to beef up the existing Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991 by making fines for intentional robocalling violations bigger and easy for the FCC to obtain. Consumers could also have a new weapon against spoofed robocalls, sometimes this year. The telecom industry has promised to roll out new technology that, though not stopping robocalls on its own, would identify calls as potentially fraudulent so that the consumers can decide whether to answer. If passed, the TRACED Act will also ensure that phone companies implement this technology. Technology that identifies calls as spam or scams could be a huge service to consumers like Mike Price, a recovering cancer patient from Denver, North Carolina, who says she must answer calls from numbers he doesn't recognize. I regularly get calls from medical specialists to inform me of test results and upcoming appointments, he says. I receive several bogus calls a day, but I'm afraid to not answer the phone. Communication breakdown. Part of what complicates the problem of stopping robocalls, spoofed or otherwise, is that not all of the calls are against the law. Certain legitimate entities, in certain situations, are allowed to make auto-dialed calls to you. Just because they're legitimate, of course, doesn't mean they're any less annoying. The Federal Communications Commission is currently considering the number of proposals related to the TCPA that, depending on what it decides, could result in more robocalls. But for now, there's the basic playbook, complete with gray areas. It's also noteworthy that there are more protections against robocalls made to your cell phone than to your landline. Calls that are mostly legal. Political parties and candidates, as well as charities, are legally allowed to auto-dial you with pre-recorded messages to your home landline. The same is true of callers whose messages are purely informational, the pharmacy telling you that your prescription is ready, your child's school to say there's a weather delay, your doctor's office to confirm an appointment. Auto-dialed telemarketing calls from legitimate outfits to your home landline are also legally permitted, provided the person on the other end is a human being. For pre-recorded messages, your written consent is required. To help consumers who want to avoid these calls is one reason the Do Not Call Registry is created in the first place. Worth knowing, these calls are prohibited before 8 a.m. and after 9 p.m. Payment reminder calls to your landline, for example, when your credit card company robocalls you to alert you that the payment is due, are generally legal without prior consent. Robocalls from debt collection agencies, which are also payment reminders, are legal to landlines and require no previous consent to be called. Moreover, these calls are not covered by the Do Not Call Registry. calls that are mostly illegal. Almost all auto-dial are pre-recorded calls, even from some charities, political parties, etc., made to your cell phone are illegal, per the TCPA, unless you have given your express permission beforehand to be contacted this way, or the call is for an emergency. If you get these calls to your cell phone and don't remember giving permission, it's possible that you checked a terms of service box or provided a phone number during a sign-up process. Doing either could constitute consent to be called, per FCC regulations. Spoof calls are illegal if the interest is to commit fraud. Certain spoof calls are permitted. A woman's shelter is allowed to spoof a number to prevent an abuser from knowing a woman's location. Police departments will also disguise their numbers when conducting investigations. Doctors sometimes use spoofing technology to make patient calls from their personal phones to avoid disclosing their private contact information. Of course, the people who are making fraudulent calls are by design operating outside the law and pay no attention to the rules. According to UMail, of the robocalls placed in 2018, 40% were scam calls, trying to trick consumers into giving away valuable personal information or defraud them out of their money. To help sort out the good calls from the bad ones, the FTC publishes a daily roster of blacklisted numbers. These are numbers that have received a significant volume of consumer complaints that apps may use to help update their list of numbers to block phone companies, some of which have developed their own call blocking software. Also may use the list to either block calls or inform their consumers when they believe the number may be problematic. Many of these illegal robocalls originate from overseas criminal rings, according to the FTC, and they tend to target the elderly and recent immigrants because both are deemed more receptive to come-ons. The scammers find people to target by consulting phone directories and mailing lists, including Sucker's List, databases of individuals believed to be susceptible to fraud. There are many types of fraudulent calls, but the IRS fraud and Social Security fraud are the two common ones. To trick you, criminals spoofs a real phone number from the IRS or the Social Security Administration and poses agents from these agencies. In the IRS scam, the caller may threaten you with jail if you don't pay taxes he claims you owe, insisting you pay immediately or dispatch the police. In the Social Security scam, the caller might say your file lacks necessary personal information, such as your Social Security number, or she may claim to need additional information to increase your benefit payment, or threaten to terminate your benefits if you don't confirm the information she has. If you get any such calls, the FTC suggests you hang up and report the call to 877-FTC-HELP or go to ftc.gov/complaint. Delayed corporate reaction. For years, phone companies larger looked the other way as the robocalls crisis exploded, consumer advocates say. They dragged their feet and failed to truly solve the problem, says Maureen Mahoney, policy analyst in the Advocacy Division of Consumer Reports. The FCC gave phone companies the right to offer advanced call blocking services in 2015 and to block certain types of clearly illegally spoofed robocalls, even without consumer consent in 2017. But still today, not all companies are doing so. The industry argues that it has been working hard to stop illegal and unwanted robocalls while being sensitive to the reality that there are some robocalls that consumers may want to receive and others that are perfectly legal. Blocking legal robocalls could expose the industry to lawsuits from companies that can claim they lost money because they were illegally prevented from doing business, as could be the case with certain telemarketers. Still, the industry vows to its determination to get robocalls under control. Member companies are fully committed to protecting consumers and will continue to work closely with the FCC, FTC, law enforcement, and other stakeholders to combat the problem, says a spokesman from the CTIA, the Wireless Industry Association. A tech solution from carriers. If technology in the hands of bad actors has given rise to the tsunami of illegal robocalls, so it may be that technology supplies a solution. Eric Berger, the FCC's chief technology officer, has said consumers can expect major phone carriers to begin to roll out a game-changing new system called Stir/Shaken this year. T-Mobile has already started to deploy it on a limited fashion. The acronym Stir/Shaken is a tortured one. Stir stands for Secure Telephone Identity Fee Resident, and SHAKEN stands for Signature-Based Handling of Asserted Information Using Tokens. Creating the technology is just one part of the broader mission of the Alliance for Telecommunications Industry Solutions / Sessions Initiation Protocol Forum, an industry-led FCC advisory task force. The hope is that Stir/Shaken will help reduce spoofed robocalls by assigning a digital fingerprint to calls. That fingerprint allows carriers to immediately know the real identity of the caller when a call passes through any part of the SONE system on its way to your device. If a caller is illegally spoofing a number to place robocalls, it will be faster and easier for telecom providers to shut it down and for law enforcement authorities to find and prosecute those responsible. Berger says with Stir/Shaken, you'll be better able to trust the caller ID. He says because it will contribute vital information to blocking services to target probable spam and fraud. On the other hand, if the caller is legitimately spoofing a number, as your doctor might, the call will go through because the carrier will have confirmed that the caller hiding his number has the right to do so, said Jim McAaron, principal technologist at ATIS. But just having the major phone carriers on board is not enough for caller authentication technology to work optimally. Many Americans, particularly those who live in more rural areas, still have old-fashioned copper wire landline phones, and their phone service providers are not fully digitized and thus cannot support Stir/Shaken. This means that there will be gaps in protection. As the major carriers become more impregnable, the bad guys will move to the more vulnerable old-school telecoms to make their illegal, unwanted robocalls, said Jerry Christensen, a telecom expert and CEO of Mind Commerce, a research company that specializes in phone systems and networking technology. The FCC's chairman, Ajit Pai, has said that he's committed to making sure that all telecoms deploy Stir/Shaken, and that he has warned the industry that the agency won't tolerate foot dragging. If it does not appear that this system is on track to get up and running by 2019, then we will take action to make sure that it does, he said in a November announcement. Consumer advocates want the companies to do more than just make the tech available. We're encouraged, the FCC chairman says robocalls are a top priority, Sihars Mahoney says, but the FCC needs to make sure that this system is effective for all consumers, which requires getting all the phone providers to participate, and that all consumers are able to stop unwanted spoof calls for free. How to protect yourself now? While consumers wait for Stir/Shaken to become fully operational, phone companies and others offer apps and devices designed to help reduce robocalls. They may block or identify suspicion numbers that may be fraudulent, such as numbers on the FCC blacklist, or those that their artificial intelligence algorithms has flagged as suspicious because of the sheer volume of calls they make. Consumers who downloaded these apps and responded to the CR survey said they work to varying degrees. If you want to try one, here are your choices. Your phone carries anti-robocall service. Many cellular providers, including AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, and Verizon, have services that alert you on your phone that an incoming call may be from a telemarketer and detect and block calls from the probable scammers. In certain cases, these services are free. For others, especially those that offer advanced security and control of calls, you have to pay. AT&T, for example, offers a basic free service, AT&T Mobile Security and Call Protect, that consumers can enable by signing up on the telecom's website. For $4 per month, AT&T offers Mobile Security and Call Protect Plus, which the company says also helps protect your data from mobile threats by providing a secure Wi-Fi virtual private network, VPN. To find out what your carrier offers, just sign in to its website and links referring to call security or call blocking. Call blocking apps. Also available are third-party apps. Meant to block robocalls before they reach user, the apps can do this using FTC blacklist as well as proprietary artificial intelligence technology that flags suspicious numbers, such as those that suddenly start to make thousands of calls. If your incoming calls are flagged by the app's algorithm, they will, in theory, be blocked. Sometimes the apps allow users to block numbers or create so-called whitelist of numbers to allow through. Widely used apps include NomoRobo, which costs $2 per month, free for landlines and available in partnership with certain telecom providers, as well as free apps such as Hiya, Umail, Mr. Number, RoboKiller, and TrueCaller. Consumer Reports has not tested the cell phone apps. It's important for consumers to read and understand the app's terms of service and privacy rules, as they should with any app downloaded from the Internet. Some, such as NomoRobo, don't require access to your contact list and other private information, but some of the free apps might. Google has recently unveiled a new tool called Call Screen, that is built into its new phones, the Pixel 2, 2XL, 3, and 3XL. When you receive a call from any number, you can tap Screen Call on your home screen and have your Google Assistant screen the call. Google Assistant will answer the call for you and have caller identify herself and why she's calling. When her caller responds, a real-time transcript of the response is displayed. If it's someone you want to speak to, you simply answer the call. If it's a robocall, you can automatically report the call to Google as spam, as well as log it or blacklist it locally on your device. The tool will then block the number from calling you in the future. The tool also lets you select a few canned responses, such as, I'll call you back. The new technology should eventually become available on other Android devices. Although this tool, and others like it, screens the call, it does not prevent the phone from ringing and interrupting you. Landline call blockers. Solutions also exist for non-digital landlines, copper wire lines, and typically involve installing hardware between your phone and the telephone line. These devices come preloaded with numbers that will be blocked, and that users need to update with unwanted numbers as they are received. These devices have a wide range of prices from around $20 to more than $100. NomoRobo offers free robocall blocking service for landlines, but it works only on newer digital phone lines and not on old-school copper lines. And here are some of the robocall epidemic numbers. Last year saw a dramatic increase in the number and scam of spam calls to landlines and increasingly to mobile phones. In fact, nearly 45% of all calls to mobile phones are projected to be scam calls in 2019, according to a projection by First Onion, Orion, a provider of call management solutions. Below the average robocall frequency in 2018, according to robocall tracking company UMail. 1,517 per second, 5,461,000 per hour, 131,066,400 per day, 3,986,602,683 per month, and 47,839,232,200 per year. The categories of robocalls: 39% are scams, 23.5% are alerts and reminders, 20% are payment reminders, and 18% are telemarketing. And then they have a chart that shows the number of robocalls per person by state. And North Carolina is between 10 and 20 per month, and that seems like an awful low number to me. The worst state is Louisiana, which gets more than 30 calls per month. And then they have a list of what have you done in response to robocalls. 70% stopped answering my phone if I don't recognize the number or if the caller's number is anonymous. 62% of most calls go to voicemail. 59% educated family members about potential threats and scams from robocalls and how to protect themselves. 7% registered my phone number on the National Do Not Call Registry. A lot of good that does. 60% started or continued using a free robocall blocking device. 13% signed a petition. 11% filed a complaint with the FTC. 8% started or continued using a paid robocall blocking service. And 11% did other things. On a scale of 0 to 10, how annoying do you find robocalls? Not at all annoying, 6%. 1 to 3, 7%. 4 to 6, 12%. 7 to 9, 21%. Tremendously annoying, 10, 52%. Do call blocking apps work? Of those who said they use robocall blocking service, we asked whether it has been helpful in reducing the number of robocalls they receive. 35% find it never helpful. 31% find it helpful. And 30% help for a while, but calls have picked back up again. And then we have a rogue gallery of robocall villains. The Federal Trade Commission and the Federal Communications Commission regularly bring actions against robocallers and do not call violators in civil court, often with help from state authorities. Since 2003, the agencies have won more than $1.5 billion in penalties and restitution. But only a small fraction of the money has been recovered, says Maureen Mahoney, policy analysis at Consumer Reports. because the culprits are difficult to track or the profits are spent. Here are some of the FTC's and recent catches. Malicious spoofer, Adrian Abramovich. The pitch. The telemarketer pushed travel deals said to be from national brands, such as Marriott and TripAdvisor, only to switch the consumer to call centers that would try to sell Mexican timeshare packages, according to the FTC. The scope of the scheme. The FTC found that the company spoofed more than 96 million robocalls in just 3 months. A medical paging company reported that the robocallers were disrupting its service, according to the FCC. The judgment. The FCC imposed a $120 million penalty in 2018. Credit card con artists. All us marketing. The pitch. A web of companies and individuals formerly operating under the name Payless Solutions made illegal robocalls pitching a program to lower credit card interest rates. The scope of the scheme. The 18 defendants phoned thousands of consumers, including many seniors, claiming they would save at least $2,500 in credit card interest payments with the rate reduction program. The consumers paid $300 to $4,999 upfront, but received no rate reductions, according to the FTC and the Florida State Attorney General. The judgment. In 2017, a court imposed a judgment of $4.9 million on the 12 defendants, alleged to be most responsible for the scam. Smaller judgments were imposed on three other defendants. For most, the judgment was entirely or partially suspended, based on an inability to pay. Relentless robocaller, Justin Ramsey. The pitch led companies that blasted out millions of robocalls, often to consumers on the Do Not Call registry, according to the FTC, offering home security systems and other products. The scope of the scheme. Despite an ongoing investigation by the FTC, allegedly continued unlawfully telemarketing through a new firm, making more than 800,000 calls to DNC numbers. The judgment, ordered to pay $2.2 million in 2017 to the FTC, suspended upon payment of $65,000, based on the inability to pay, banned from placing robocalls as well as calling and selling list of do not call numbers. Insurance telemarketer, Philip Rozelle. The pitch, marketed health insurance allegedly by foregoing targeting vulnerable consumers, including the elderly, the infirm, and low-income people, according to the FCC. The scope of the scheme. Using spoofed caller ID numbers, the FCC found that the company made more than 21.5 million robocalls in 3 months, averaged 200,000 per day. The judgment. In 2018, the FCC imposed a forfeiture of $83 million on Rozelle and its company. California scheming. Aaron Michael Jones. The pitch. A nine-person operation in California led by Jones engineered billions of illegal robocalls, offered extended auto warranties or search engine optimizer services, according to the FTC. The operation also generated leads for other companies selling those goods and services, among others. The scope of the scheme. The operation called phone numbers, including those in the Do Not Call registry, at a rate of more than $100 million per year. The judgment. Jones was ordered to pay $2.7 million to the FTC. He and the other defendants were banned from robocalling and abusive telemarketing activities. Penalties totaling $9.9 million were imposed on the others, with all but $510,000 suspended because of the inability to pay. Robocall ringleader, Kevin Guise. The pitch, ran two telemarketing companies and 11 shell companies from a boiler room in Florida, offered a credit card debt elimination services charging between $2,500 and almost $26,000 up front. The scope of the scheme. Raked in more than $23 million from more than 10,000 consumers, according to the FTC. The judgment, ordered to pay $23 million by a Florida federal court in 2018 for damages and restitution to defrauded consumers, required to surrender personal property, including a 58-foot yacht, to a court-appointed receiver. Tricky travel deals. Caribbean Cruise Line. The pitch, hired a company that ran allegedly illegal telemarketing campaign that commented consumers a free two-day Bahamas cruise if they answered a political survey. The calls were designed to push more costly products and services to consumers, generating millions of dollars, according to the FTC. The scope of the scheme. The operation made billions of robocalls that relied on ID spoofing, disguising the names that would appear on caller IDs, according to the FTC. The judgment. Caribbean was fined $7.73 million in 2015, partially suspended after payment of $500,000. With other defendants, was banned from making robocalls and engaging in abusive telemarketing practices. And then there's a checklist to stop robocalls before they reach me. And here's the script that you can use. I am calling on the Federal Communications Commission to better shield consumers from intrusive robocalls as soon as possible. In particular, I support a mandatory caller ID verification technology. I also expect the FCC to make sure that the technology is as effective as possible in stopping these calls and it is free to consumers. And you can send that to Consumer Reports, 1101 17th Street Northwest, number 500, Washington, D.C., 20036. Sign and mail this petition by May 31st, 2019. We'll deliver the ones we collect directly to the FCC. If you would rather sign this petition online, please go to robocallspetition.cr.org. Tweet at FCC to tell the agency that you want phone companies to require to stop robocalls now. Be sure to use the hashtag end robocalls. Note, petitions and comments, including your name and address filed with the FCC, or a matter of public record, and will be viewable online after being submitted to the doc list. Check this box if you'd like to receive information. Well, obviously, you can't do that. Your information is governed by the Consumer Reports policy. To learn more, go to cr.org/privacy. Well, since we have about a minute and a half left, why don't we come through all in a day's work jokes. I changed my computer password at work, but it didn't write it down, so naturally I couldn't remember the next time I tried to sign on. I called the help desk and was asked to hold while the tech looked at my password. A minute later, she came back, "Does stupid sound familiar?" My last promotion entitled me to a bigger cubicle. Wow. Since I was comfortable where I was, I declined the larger space, but my boss insisted and had maintenance workers expand my cubicle by 18 whole inches. Once the work was completed, my boss stepped by and with a benevolent grin announced, "Now, this is more benefiting to your new status." And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest of Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the reading service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so very much for listening.